Hobbies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and Brian Lloyd are with us all once again. Good afternoon to you all. Linda was beside herself with excitement telling us about the Pinot Grigio we're going to drink, which apparently is interesting.
Oh my God.
Challenge accepted.
So mean. No, the last time I was really mean to Pinot Grigio.
It deserved it. It had it coming.
No, we did Pinots the last time. Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir, and Pinot Grigio is often a neutral, bland wine that people drink it that they don't really like wine or they don't know a whole lot and they think it's safe. This one is spectacular.
That's a good way of putting it. It's like Pinot Grigio is like the, it's people who don't actually, it's like the Boyzone version of people who don't like music.
Listen, yeah, it's like Black Eyed Peas. Yeah. Black Eyed Peas is rap music for people who don't like rap.
But when you get a good one, which this is, it is so expressive, it is so interesting, and it's what a good Pinot Grigio is supposed to be.
Okay, and they both come from Italy. They're both from Italy.
They're both actually from Ruffino, which is one of my absolute favourite wineries in Italy, in Chianti region. And they're just back in the Irish market. I used to sell them years and years ago, and I am just excited. National Chianti Day. Chianti Day, everybody.
Is it National Chianti Day?
Yeah. Oh, it's the first Friday of September every year. So,
okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, exciting. Happy Chianti Day to everybody. And Honey Don't, as I understand, is the second in a B-movie lesbian trilogy. Mm-hmm. Sold.
Do you know what? You say that, and you're like, Jesus, I'm on board 100%. And it's like one of the Coen brothers. And again, you're like, yeah, baby. Yeah. No, they're terrible. They're so bad. It is so poor and it's so disappointing. And I do not want to go two studs in on it, but it's pretty crap. Like, it's, you know, don't.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Crikey.
Sorry.
Yeah. Because I suppose maybe it's, is it set in the 70s?
No.
Or is it to look like it's set in the 70s?
It's pastiche. It's all pastiche of like 70s noir, kind of like, you know, The Long Goodbye and all the rest of it. And like what Margaret Qualley, who's the lead in it, again, she's playing this sort of very hard-bitten, hard-drinking detective character, but it's a woman and she's a lesbian. And it's like, okay, great, cool, that's good. You know, I'm all for putting a spin on the ball or whatever, but this is so poorly written and is so badly executed that it's just like, you know, Ethan, make up with your brother, get back to work, stop this, whatever you're doing. Like, I know you think you're trying to go for creative expressionism and, you know, like you say, pastiche of like 70s detective stories with a sort of an LGBT slant on it. Just, okay, it's not working. You've had two of them now and it's not working. The third one's not going to fix it. Just get back to work.
Why did the Coen brothers?
Nobody knows.
The Coens, I should
this
say.
Is it. No one actually knows. Like, Joel Coen went off and did The Tragedy of Macbeth. Fantastic film if you haven't seen. It's this dark, black and white, expressionistic version of Macbeth. Denzel Washington is in it. It's fantastic. I highly, highly recommend it. He did this, and then he did Driveway. Ethan Coen did Driveway Dolls, which was the first in this trilogy, and then he did this, Honey Don't, and then he's the third one on the way. They've both been bad. Basically, they've both been very, very poor.
That's disappointing. And Sanatorium.
Yes.
This is from an Irish company, but what you'd expect an Irish company to make a documentary about.
No, about basically a Ukrainian health resort in Odessa. And the nearest thing I could compare this to is like the Grand Budapest Hotel, in that it's this, you know, charming, beautiful wreck of a place, but is held together by love and by, you know, the weird people who are basically trying to keep it afloat in the middle of a war. And I mean, you literally see these people, you know, it's on the Black Sea, so they're putting all
and they're on the front lines. They can hear the explosions in the difference.
You literally hear, like, I mean, the opening scene of it is them kind of just, you know, faffing about in the resort or whatever, and then you hear the air raid siren going off. But, and I know it's Ukrainian, but it's also kind of very Irish. No one reacts. It's just like, oh yeah, there you go, yeah. And then like the dog just kind of gets up and just kind of slowly walks away, and everyone's like, I'm going to finish my coffee and then we'll go down to the air raid.
Is it
in English?
No, it's all in Ukrainian. Or Russian, I should say. Russian, Ukrainian.
Okay.
So yeah. Bad.
But Odessa, it's supposed to be beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's so, like, it's really, again, it's that kind of like lovely, warm, you know, like Mediterranean. It's not Mediterranean, obviously, it's on the Black Sea, but it's that lovely like yellows and blues and it's gorgeous. And I'd love to go there.
I've always wanted to go there.
I would love to go there, like, but obviously, you know, because it's in the middle of a war and stuff. And they talk about that as well, the fact that the hotel/resort is at 18% occupancy and, like, you know, this used to house, like, 3,000 people. Like, how are we going to keep this going? Well, we'll just keep going. We're not going anywhere, so we're going to keep it going.
Oh, gosh. And speaking of resorts in parts of the world, the White Lotus 4, it's going to be in France this year.
Vive la France for the White Lotus Season 4. Yeah, the deadline had this week because there was a lot of speculation as to where they'd go next. I think creator Mike White had said he wants to get away from the sea and the lapping waves and the implications of people dying at sea and drowning and all that jazz. So we are going with France. Yeah. Now, not confirmed as to where, because obviously with the White Lotus, it's tied in with this. It's like a marketing partnership as well that they have with the Four Seasons. So now obviously this news comes out and people are trying to figure out which Four Seasons it could potentially be mostly based in. Now, with last season in Thailand, they filmed across two, I think. But in terms of setting, people reckon it's going to be, excuse my French pronunciation, the Grand Hotel du Cap Ferret, which is in the French Riviera, strong proximity to Cannes. So then we're thinking, okay, is it going to be Hollywood-y? Is it going to be kind of fame?
I've been there. The hotel, actually, I stood outside it.
Okay. Nice.
That's a really posh hotel I could never possibly afford. But yeah, oh no, you know, in that kind of way. It's like the French, you know, if you could say the French were the classiest race on earth, they kind of lose it a bit when it gets to the Riviera and they become kind of almost like, you know, pastiche versions of themselves.
Okay.
You know,
oh, yeah.
A bit over the top, you know.
Interesting.
Gaudy, right. to a point, literally like onions wrapped around with stripes.
Berets.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
There's another one that's in the heart of Paris and there's another one in the French Alps, although we know Mike White is not a fan of the cold, so like we're definitely never getting like a ski season kind of vibes.
I don't know about that.
See, unless he's changed his mind, but like he's on record as saying we're never doing White Lotus cold. We're never doing White Lotus cold country. You know what I mean? What was the True Detective one in the snow?
Yeah,
True Detective Night Country. We're never getting White Lotus Night Country. You know?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay, so but people won't die at sea. He'll have to come up with some other method of killing them.
Yeah, so that's
what if it's Paris, like probably traffic. You'll get run over every 5 seconds.
Yeah, or again, if he does decide to go to the Alps, but maybe not ski season. Shove a few people off a cliff.
Off a cliff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Barry Eastender's job, you know,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, that could work. I could see that.
Though, yeah, if it's the Riviera.
Poisoned or wine. There could be poisonings.
Poisoned wines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we did kind of have that a little bit in the last season.
True,
No spoilers, but, you know.
Yeah. So. Right, so, and there has been a first look of the Wuthering Heights. There was already controversy about the casting.
Yes, which we've talked about a lot in the show. We got our first teaser trailer this week. It's looking very horny, girls. It's looking very... Now, it's a teaser trailer, I should say, as well, so it's not... And obviously, it's based on Wuthering Heights, but everyone should know that story or has a vague idea of the story.
Yeah.
For Emily Bronte, but people are... I mean, the people who... I say this as someone who kind of has no deep affinity with the story, as some people do... The people who love Bronte and love this particular work are very, very scared based on this teaser trailer because, as I said,
it's filth.
It's implication of smut. It's like fingers in things and like Jacob Elordi looking a certain way, just the way that he looks.
Yeah, and he's shirtless and covered in grease.
Yeah, it's a lot like the book toxification of the film. You know,
well, let's say they're not being faithful to the text.
Yeah. Which again, people had already issues with because of the casting. People say Margot Robbie's too old. That they don't match enough in age. A lot of issues around Heathcliff. You know, a lot of people have interpreted the text to be that Heathcliff should not be white. Jacob Elordi is white, but also like we're in the hands of Emerald Fennell, who's done Saltburn and Promising Young Woman. And the issue with Saltburn was that. Well, for a lot of people, I won't speak for everyone, but the general consensus was this is a lot of style over substance. And now people are worried that this is going to be the exact same thing with this, a much more important text for people. And, you know, the fact that it's basically previously never kind of been done. It's never been adapted well, according to the fans.
I disagree. Okay. Timothy Dalton did it in the 70s and it was great.
Okay.
Like, it's really...
Gosh. And Timothy Dalton was Heathcliff.
Yeah, he was Heathcliff.
Yeah.
And like, again, that's the whole thing of it. It is like, you know... Yes, fine. It's not a smutty book.
You see, it kind of is and it isn't. It's
That's it!
It is all about sex, but no one has sex.
Thank you for saying that because this is just... has been aggravating me since I've seen this trailer, right? Yes, it's not talked about in the book. Yes, the previous adaptations have not kind of leaned in on it. It's there in the book, though. It's subtext.
Yeah.
And this,
yeah.
And like, if Emerald Fennell is known for anything, she's about as subtle as a fart in a bathtub. Right?
Yeah.
So if there's going to be sex hinted at in the book, guess what? It's going to be front and center in this.
Which blows the whole point, premise of the book, yeah.
But
a story. She's a stylist. She's all about aesthetics. Like, so, like, why not let her have a go at it? Like,
well, yeah. Sure, but like, the tension, if you like,
is not being said.
It's a sexual tension. It's all the things you can't say and you're nearly there, but you're not there, you know.
Yeah.
And all those unresolved... But she resolves them. So then what's the point?
Nullifying it.
Yeah.
The teaser trailer is a lot of like yearn, a lot of like, oh, Margot Robbie's thinking about Jacob Elordiwe in the heats and...
Fingers and mouths. Yeah. It's all fingers
egg
and mouths.
Egg yolks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Doing it very
fish.
Audio description. Yeah. Fingers bread focaccia being kind of stuck into... or some type of bread. I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
I like it. I like that.
Yeah, I bet you it will be focaccia.
Yeah.
Which, of course, was very common in
was it?
On the moors in the, 1800s. Anyway, what wine are you going to tell us about first? And would it be go well with focaccia?
It would go fabulous with focaccia.
Brilliant.
It absolutely would. Okay, so this, I think, is a sexy Pinot Grigio.
Okay.
Why? Ooh. I know. Yeah. Right.
Talking the talk, so, there, girl.
Ruffino, one of an amazing. I love the winery. As I said, I was super excited to see them back in Ireland. So they're founded in 1877. So they're making wine a while, but usually it's the classic Chiantis. Whereas now they're going a bit more innovative and doing more indigenous little grapes like Pinot Grigio, but they're also going off and making Chardonnay and other grapes as well that you wouldn't normally see from Tuscany. So it's kind of a new modern range that they're doing as well. What I love about this wine is the fact that I had to work very hard to find a decent Pinot Grigio, not going to lie. Lots of research over the last few weeks. This is amazing, right? There's so much going on. And for me, it's because they make it, I often mention stainless steel, which doesn't give any flavour to the wine.
Yeah.
And it's just a vessel to store it in. This is in amphora, clay amphora. So it has a bit of texture to it. They leave the wine on the lees for 5 months, which is the dead yeast cells. I know it sounds gross, but it adds texture and complexity to the wine. So this is amazing with your focaccia, with your prawns, linguine, anything like that as well. Just amazing. But for me, you just drink it on its own. It's not a bland Pinot Grigio. It's sensational.
No, it's not. In absolute fairness. It's
what did
not,
you say,
no,
Sean?
No, it's
do you
not
like
because
it?
A Pinot Grigio often doesn't taste of anything. And
that's the kind of the thing of it.
It tastes really ripe, gorgeous pear, really amazing fruit coming through and really fresh at the same time. But there's texture to it, which is really, really nice. So people are jumping on top of this now. So it is available in Nectar Wines, Nolan's, O'Driscoll's and Kerry. The Corkscrew, the Allotment, Wine and Line, and it's going to be in lots of other independents soon as well.
Okay,
love
it. And is it just grape-wise?
Ruffino, La Solita, Toscana, Pinot Grigio.
Okay.
2024 vintage just landed in the country.
Okay. Excellent pronunciation there.
You're very welcome.
She was...
Was
that the one you were practicing, was it?
Yeah, when she said that, I got sunburned.
No, what do you call it? You didn't see it. When she was outside, she got the dude, the winery dude, to like say it into her phone.
La Solita.
And she was...
Yeah,
and she was like practicing it outside. You didn't see.
Oh my God, it was probably like the trailer for Wuthering Heights. What movie would you like to talk about first?
Honey Don't, I guess.
Okay, Honey Don't, coming up after this.
You haven't described any suspicious activity.
The gunshot.
Well, that's a noise. And a noise is not an activity.
Someone firing the gun would be an activity.
If someone fired a gun and it wasn't a car backfiring.
A car backfiring?
That is right.
When's the last time you heard a car backfiring?
What does that have to do with anything?
A car backfiring isn't a real thing anymore. I didn't realize it was a thing people still said until you said it.
Well, all right, well, I'm old school.
Maybe you should acknowledge what century it is.
This from someone who uses payphones.
I don't use payphones.
Oh, really? Okay.
Marty, okay, I'm trying to scratch your back here. Remember how I'm supposed to scratch your back?
Oh, I remember.
You find out what kind of hanky-panky is going on this place. It's a feather in your cap.
There you go. That's Honey Don't. Aubrey Plaza's in it. Is this the first film since...
I think this might have been filmed before, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I can't be 100% sure, but like, yeah. I mean, she's been on the promotional trail for this film, and she obviously did that interview with Amy Poehler where she talked about it, and you know. But she's in this.
Yeah.
But she's kind of I want to say a minor role. Like, what I would say about this film is that it has a great cast. Like, obviously you heard there Charlie Day, Chris Evans is in this as well. Patrick Swayze's brother Don Swayze is in it. But he's this great kind of Texas character actor, and obviously Margaret Qualley is in there as well. So there was a film previous to this called Drive Away Dolls, which was again kind of a, you know, aping Raising Arizona, kind of a screwball comedy, if you like. But this is much more in the vein of, you know, a noir detective story with comedy elements. Again, kind of like The Long Goodbye, but nowhere near as good as that. Margaret Qualley plays Honey Donahue, who's this private eye working in Barksdale, California, I want to say it was Barksdale or Riversdale. I can't remember the name of the city, but it's basically like this really kind of rundown dump of a town. And a client is about to take her on when that client then suddenly dies in a car crash. Turns out that client is tied in with this religious group that's led by Chris Evans called the Four Way Church. That church is actually a front for a drug smuggling business that you never actually see happening, if you know that sort of way. You just see all these kind of deaths, these people being killed around it, but you never actually see the sort of the enterprise of it and such. And, you know, Chris Evans is kind of, you know, he's able to play dirtbag really, really well. And I mean, if you look at like Knives Out, for example, and him playing Ransom, like, it's one of his best roles, probably his best role, certainly a hell of a lot better than anything he did in Marvel, you know, that kind of way. And in this, he's kind of channeling that sort of like, you bungling idiots kind of vibe to it, which is always very, very funny. But the problem that I had with this, and it's a problem I've had with a lot of kind of noirs lately, and True Detective Season 2 actually is one that would have it as well, which is that, you know, a good noir, it's filled with red herrings. It's filled with misdirection. This thing that you thought means something actually means something else. Bad noir, like True Detective Season 2 and like this, it sets all up with these red herrings. And then when you get to the sort of the big reveal or whatever it is, turns out it actually didn't mean anything. It's just, no, that was like 70% of the film wasted. That whole subplot didn't mean anything. That character has nothing to do with this. This whole thing, nothing to do with it. It's all just what da.
Yeah.
And as I was watching it, it felt like they got to the end of the film. They got to the last, like the final, like fifth act, third act, whatever you want to call it. And they were like, shit, we've got to write an ending here. Quick, just scribble something down. It's like, here, there you go. It turns out it's this. And it's so truncated and so kind of sloppily written that you would not believe that this was the same person who wrote The Big Lebowski, that this is the same person who did Blood Simple, who did Raising Arizona. And like, you know, I get what Ethan Coen is trying to do here. Like, he's trying to kind of go back to, you know, smaller mid-range comedies that can have a great cast, that can stand on their own, that doesn't need a lot of pyrotechnics. It's admirable what he's doing, and he's doing it with his wife as well, Trisha Cook. And she obviously, she's a lesbian, but they're in a sort of an open marriage arrangement kind of thing. I don't really know what the story is. But so she's...
Hollywood.
The point I'm making is that like they are bringing authenticity to it in terms of like the fact that the character is LGBT or whatever. But it's not enough. Like, it's just not enough. Like, there's not enough here to kind of hang your hat on. Like, and I mean,
like, that just sounds like the lesbian aspect is just a gimmick.
Yeah, kind of. Like, I was watching, I was like, all right, she's gay. She sleeps with a lot of women. It's very explicit. I mean, I would say that. Like, it's very, very explicit. But so what? Like, you know, that kind of way. Like, I mean, like, the nearest thing. The nearest thing I could kind of point this towards is, and again, I'm going to sound like a freak now, but whatever, it doesn't matter. If you've ever watched like a full length porn film from the 70s and 80s, they have like an actual storyline to them. Right?
Yeah, because it sounds like actually a bit like the blaxploitation movies in the 70s.
Yes, yes. And I can feel the judgment in this room. It's palpable. But those, you know, like the story of O and all these kind of, you know, like films from the 70s that where there was, you know, it was not called porn, it was called erotica.
Yes.
You know, that kind of way. The storylines generally rarely were almost secondary, but they wrote them kind of with a lot of like gusto to them. You know, that kind of way. This is what this feels like as well. It feels like if this was directed by anyone else and it didn't have professional actors in it, I'd say, oh, I'm just going to skip to the parts I want to see, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not that kind of
yeah.
way. I'd be skipping over the rest of it. Oh, I'm so God. Sorry to be admitting this on air, but like, it's the nearest thing I can compare it to, you know, that kind of way. Like, it's just, it's very kind of high class smut,
yeah.
but not good at all. Like, so, yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, it's poor. Like,
that's fairly, you said you didn't want to go studs in.
Well, but like, it's, you know, Margaret Qualley is funny in it. I don't know if she has enough kind of screen presence to kind of lead a film on her own.
Yeah.
I think Chris Evans is at his best when he's playing dirtbags, and he's great in this. He's innocent in this. Aubrey Plaza as well. Again, I would see she's innocent in this. Charlie Day as well. Margaret Qualley, I just feel like, you know, she's on her own on this, and I don't know if she has enough kind of mileage. I don't know if she has the experience, if she has the presence to kind of lead a film by herself, but damn it, they're trying in this, and you can feel it struggling as a result, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, that
Sorry.
Sounds like one tip. Well, don't apologise. If it's rubbish, it's rubbish. That's what it is. That's the truth of it. Hopefully, this time next year, you won't be giving a similar review to the Bluey movie, which should be out in August. Well, actually, one of the things that fascinates me about this is that the length of a Bluey episode is 7 minutes.
It's crazy. Yeah.
And they're beautifully crafted within that really 7 minutes. And I'm wondering if kids who were used to seeing Bluey over 7 minutes are going, when do we get to the end of this? It's going to be hard to get them to concentrate.
Although, are the episodes not kind of packaged as like two episodes or is it two episodes in the 7 minutes?
No, like an episode is 7 minutes long. They now have a thing called mini Blueys that are 2 minutes long.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which is just like the dad tickling the kids and stuff like that.
Our attention spans are shot. I think kids watch them nonstop though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's true. They binge them, yeah.
Yeah. My lovely little nephew Ben, like that, he can't take his eyes off Bluey, like it's constant Bluey, and he could be watching it for hours and you wouldn't even know. Not that he's let do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like genuinely they do it that way that you just I'm sure watching it and was there for about 45 minutes.
Oh, you wouldn't. It's great. But each one has kind of a theme and
great.
Has a conclusion and, you know, within that 7 minute timescape. But this, presumably they're going to have to do this over 90 minutes.
So well,
I'd say 70.
70, 60, 70? I'd imagine. Yeah. We've no word on that yet.
Unless it's a huge fight scene at the end. Well, it goes on for 2 hours.
Right. So it's out in cinemas August 6th, 2027. So it's not next year. It's the following year. But then it'll be on streaming. It'll be on Disney Plus for anyone who wants to stream it there. The press release says the film will continue the adventures of Bluey, a lovable, inexhaustible Bluey healer dog who lives their mum, dad and her little sister Bingo, which also doesn't point to much conflict, you know what I mean? I'm like, what is actually going to happen here? What's
yeah,
the story?
There's not much in
where are they
hint?
going?
But yeah,
what are they doing guys? But don't they, wasn't there one thing where like they were going to move away or something like that and then they move back? Like, I mean, I've watched some of them. They're very lovely. Like, they're very calm, but like they've already been putting them into cinemas already. Like, they basically packaged like, I don't know, 10 of them. And then they put them on. Yeah, it's like Bluey's first cinema trip or something like that. Like, and they've basically been doing this already. This is the first one, as far as I know, that they're like, we are making a 90-minute...
It's an actual original.
An actual original thing. The other one was like 10 episodes smushed together.
Oh, so they're softening up the market already.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, cute.
Yeah.
Because they don't really do anything. It's like stuff around the house.
It's very mundane, life household stuff that you would expect, which again is probably part of the appeal. So.
Yeah.
You'd wonder how they kind of elevate that.
Big it up. Yeah.
But then also, again, are the children going to care about that? No. Are the children going
no,
to...
No, probably not.
This isn't very plot dense.
Yeah.
I thought there'd be more points of conflict in this. No, they're going to be like...
Plus also, now, I know you're right. Like, you get one or two little ones in front of Bluey and they'll concentrate on it. In a cinema where you have like...
20, like
400. I want to go to the toilet.
I like
smearing jam on themselves.
I'm gonna dob a film studio in it. Right, they keep screening, have like the early press shows on like a Sunday morning down in like the Point Cinema, and it's filled with kids, and it's the worst possible experience. And every time I go to it, and it's just like. I'm gonna give this film less. I'm gonna give this film minus stars now because you keep doing this, like where you put it in. Because their whole thing is like, no, you have to see it with kids. You have to see how kids see it.
Wow,
kids aren't seeing anything.
They sent you to see the lesbian B movie trilogy with a load of kids.
No,
that seems inappropriate somehow.
Children, avert your eyes. It may take different forms.
I hope they didn't watch that Wuthering Heights trailer either.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to know, is it National Chianti Day all over the world or just in Ireland or Italy or,
yeah,
or how does it work?
National Chianti Day, yeah.
Wouldn't that be
well, it would make it International Chianti Day.
Okay, it just said National Chianti Day.
Or is it World Chianti Day?
It didn't say World Chianti Day. It said National Chianti Day is
must be
the...
here.
I'm celebrating it, so
okay. Okay, sorry, I hit you up with details there. Right, so
National Calendar Day proclaimed National Chianti Day to be observed on the first Friday of September annually.
Do they harvest it on this day or something?
No, it's just a marketing day, okay?
Oh. Just because,
and
you know,
I just think
Pinot Grigio Day was yesterday, so they had to squeeze it in some place.
No, I like marketing grape days because it gets people, and I always highlight them because I think people get stuck in a rut, okay?
Yeah.
And I haven't had a Chianti for a while because there's a lot of Chianti that is a bit meh as well.
Mm.
However, am I talking about my wine yet?
No.
Okay,
yeah,
well
no,
then
no,
I won't.
No.
Tell me about the one.
Okay.
Just tease them, Linda.
Okay. Chianti coming soon.
Just tease them. This is a more even more exciting news. Phoebe Waller-Bridge has taken time out from counting her millions to do some actual work.
She's back to her best, girls. She's finally
clocking in.
Yeah, we're getting the Tomb Raider series, it seems, headed to production. Getting ready to shoot with Sophie Turner is going to be Lara Croft, which I think had been much reported prior to this. I think... Oh, sorry. Well, like, they say this, actually, they're getting ready to shoot. Production is going to begin January 19th, 2026. So we're probably not going to see this until 2027 then.
Oh, God.
Crazy. She's also, in terms of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she's still writing and creating and executive producing it, but they've brought on Chad Hodge, who's also going to help her, maybe, because they're afraid that maybe she'll just run off again and decide not to work on it. But a glowing statement about how excited she is to bring a character that people grew up with to the screens, all that jazz. Obviously, Lara Croft, previously portrayed by Angelina Jolie, Alicia Vikander. Am I interested? I don't know. I like Sophie Turner. I find her, like on and off screen a bit like compelling, but I don't know. Although I will say I did like Mr. and Mrs. Smith that was from Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
She had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Did she have nothing to do with the end?
She was writing.
Yeah, no, she had a row with your man.
She had a row with Donald Glover and then basically got her name taken off it and just completely had nothing to do with
it. Oh, I thought it was still written by her, but it's just that she wasn't in it.
No.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, now I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
okay.
Meh.
Well, if say they made it a bit funny at times, that because the other Tomb Raiders were grand, but they were very po-faced.
Yeah, and Sophie is, I feel like, has comedic ability. But then you also don't want it to be too, like, haha, lol, either. I don't want to...
No.
You don't want to
no.
go that far with irreverence, like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, you don't do that. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show in Newstalk. We're going to take a break, back in a couple of minutes. Tell us about our next wine, Linda.
Absolutely. Yes, so this is Ruffino Chianti Classico Reserva. Now, that actually means something because not all Chiantis are the same. So Chianti is a region and the majority of the grape in it is Sangiovese, okay? However, a Chianti Classico is from the heart of the region using the best quality grapes that are at a higher altitude and the best quality. You have to use a maximum of 80%
of Sangiovese.
Sangiovese in a Classico blend, and you're allowed to use other grapes but not white grapes. Whereas in a normal Chianti, you can use 70% Sangiovese and other grapes, including white grapes.
Oh.
So that's why the quality of Chianti can vary an awful lot. So I would recommend straight away look for a Chianti Classico, and if you can go Reserva, you're getting a little bit more bang for your buck there as well.
And Reserva means what? It's a bit
Reserva
older?
Reserva means it has to have spent a minimum of 2 years in oak barrels. So it adds complexity, dimension, softens the tannins, makes a smoother, soft wine. However, Chianti is supposed to be enjoyed with pizza, pasta, tomato-based food because it has this kind of savoury note. I personally wouldn't drink it on its own. I had some pizza last night. I opened this as well. A Chianti Classico Reserva should be opened an hour at least beforehand or decant it.
Mm.
And I did taste it last night. See, I only had a little bit last night.
You did, you were very good.
I know, yeah. I'm down to share it.
Yeah.
But I had pizza and it was just spot on with it.
Okay.
So tomato-based.
What kind of pizza did you have?
I actually came home to leftovers and there was one piece left and it was like
I actually phoned
and said, can I please have this piece of pizza? And there was all sorts on it. Not my normal pizza. I had chicken, pepperoni, salami, peppers, everything.
Okay, a lot going on.
Yeah, type of pizza, but it was just one piece and it was just perfect. So I was really happy.
Crunchy?
Look, it wasn't the best pizza, okay?
No,
I make
but you
my
don't
own.
Bite into it and it's been
oh, you make your own pizza?
Yeah, with my Thermomix.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
fancy. And what do you, when you're making pizza?
So I'm quite basic. I would just usually do Parma ham, rocket, good quality olive oil, and parmesan.
Yeah, rocket on pizza, really. Like
love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. Just really basic, really rustic. And what's amazing about this particular wine is, so Chianti Classico, 80% Sangiovese, minimum of 2 years aging. And they just make better quality Chianti. Okay. So have you tasted it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Really, yeah, I know.
Spot on.
Do you know what's gorgeous with this? Aubergine Parmigiana. Amazing as well. And Monty's in Temple Bar. I don't know if you know
that. Oh, yeah, Monty's, yes. Yeah.
So, so he's taken this in as well.
Oh.
And it goes amazing with the lamb and all those gorgeous kind of spices costa, and stuff like that. Amazing. So Chianti is one that I often forget to actually drink and buy myself, but it is a really good book, Chianti Classico. And this is Rufino and the Reserva.
Okay.
So yum, delicious. So cherry, violet, tobacco spice, which is a little bit of a weird one.
Yeah.
A little bit of, and it has nice fresh acidity, but it's quite medium and soft at the same time. So again, similar stockists, Monty's, as I said, Nectar wines, Nolan's, O'Driscoll's, the Corkscrew, the Allotment wine online, and lots more.
Okay, lovely.
Lots in Clontarf.
Yeah, well done.
You said lots there.
Sorry, lot the allotment.
Oh, the allotment. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I'll tell Rory and Lots and Co. to get it in.
That would be my local.
They're local. Now, the paper, which is kind of like, sort of like The Office, but not.
Yeah.
And Donald Gleason's is in it.
Yeah.
And I read a few reviews of it that weren't gone mad on it.
Yeah, because I've been talking about it over the last while, that kind of the switch and how it was being released and stuff kind of pointed to it being not great. I still haven't watched it. Brian has. Brian is on board.
I am on board.
Convinced.
Oh, are you?
I'm, 100%. I dig it. Yeah. I like it a lot. Donald Gleason, very funny. He is a really good comedic actor. He does not get enough credit for this. You go back and watch Star Wars. That character that he played, General Hux, it's like a slapstick character. In this, though, I would say this is more in the vein of Parks and Rec, where you have like this uber chipper, optimistic leader of band of misfits in a failing industry trying to keep the whole thing going. Like, I loved it. I thought this was great. I've watched like four episodes of it. I'm enjoying it. It's the right kind of blend of like, you know, sentimentality and sort of an awareness. Like, it's actually very aware of the fact that, like, you know, journalism is in crisis in America and across the globe, and that we no longer share reality as we understand it. Your one's name, and it's Sabrina Impacciatore.
Yep.
Help.
Yep, Sabrina Impacciatore, you're right.
Yeah, from White Lotus
Season 2.
Is in it as well, and the two of them play off each other, as in she's the sort of Dwight Schrute, you know, scheming eunuch trying to topple him, but he's I'm saying that like, it's not that, like,
she's all about the digital. I've seen one clip of it where it's like she's over the digital content and like basically thinks the print is like such farce, whatever, but then she's kind of going through what she actually does, like her articles, and it's a bit like, okay, the clip I've seen of her kind of made me want to watch it. But anyway,
okay,
it's been renewed for a second season, which is why I was here to talk about it, which again kind of leads me to believe that like there's someone in a room is positive about this. They basically said Greg Daniels is the author showrunner. He's working on this as well with Michael Coman as well. And they said they want to keep up momentum and the early renewal is so that hopefully it will be out same time next year. And also they had these ideas kind of percolating. They said they want to work on them straight away. So one to look out for. It's airing on Sky and then you can catch up on Now. So
yeah. Okay. Right. Well, I am looking forward to it now. Right. Okay. Our second movie is called Sanatorium. Here's a clip.
Slava Ukraini. Slava Ukraini.
Знаете, как мы, как стюардессы в самолете. Самолет, если даже по кету, все равно она должна говорить, что все хорошо и все прекрасно.
У меня было тут достаточно часу, чтобы я подумала за свою жизнь. Я полна сил, чтобы дальше двигаться.
Тут оно идет, если оп, пошло вверх, вот что-то высокое, хоть не с вагитностью.
Ну, то, что ты не вагитная, это точно.
Да.
Yeah, go one for our, all our Ukrainian listeners there. And if you didn't understand what that woman was saying, she was just saying she never expected to get a call from the cash machine. She's going to spend some money on the house and buy a new car. Right, so it's kind of sounds like it's sad but beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about it. Yeah, that's exactly what I loved about this. It's sad and beautiful. And funny. Yeah. And very, very funny. Like, you are not prepared for the humor in this. Like, there's a great scene in a... where it's, you know, what the director Gara O'Rourke does is he basically just sets the camera up in a very sort of like full, like very neatly arranged. And then he has the characters kind of, I say characters, they're real people, obviously. Mm. But they come in and do whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing. And there's one bit in it where you see the kind of building manager walk through and you hear that lovely kind of summery Ukrainian music where it's all like, and then he opens up the door and he's like cursing out some other lad, the electrician. It's all like, I effing told you how many times, get that generator up and running, slams the door. And then the music kicks back in. Like, there's a great sense of humor in this. And I mean, there's even the people who go to this resort as well. Like, I mean, there's a mother and son that go to this. And the son is like in his 40s, unmarried, never had a girlfriend. And the mother is, you know, very domineering. But at the same time, she's like, I just want him to have a husband. Or have a wife, rather. I just want him off my hands and all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's a play in itself, yeah, I think. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Like, you're watching it. It's like, it's all these like little slices of life. But then is the reality that this is in the middle of a war zone, like, you know, that sort of way. Like, you literally, you see the people like going out into the estuary, covering themselves in the mud of the Black Sea, and they're kind of lying out, and it's all that very kind of like they're playing table tennis. But then you look literally right outside the window and you can see smoke plumes coming out and you can hear an air raid siren going off. So it's very much, it's not as if the war is coming towards them. It's that it's there.
Yeah.
But they're making a point of, we are going to continue on as we are. It doesn't matter if 5 people or 50 people or 500 people turn up. We're going to do the exact same job. Even if we have to, you know, rebuild this from the rubble, we are going to keep this going. And it's, again, it's that thing of like resilience. And I mentioned like Grand Budapest Hotel. That's the nearest thing I could point it to. It's this idea of like this oasis in the middle of a horrible, horrible thing, but this small oasis of, you know, rejuvenation and health and community and the idea of like, you know, war is so kind of clinical nowadays, and we think of drones and we think of like, you know, aerial shots or whatever. But in this, like, there's one patient in it. She's there because she developed psoriasis. And they're talking to her about what happened and how she suddenly developed it. And you find out that her husband died in the war a year ago and she wasn't able to cope. And the stress of losing her husband was so much that she had to check herself in for it. And then there's like another character that's, you know, a young woman rather, who wants to have a child, and her husband, her and her husband haven't been able to conceive. So they're going to this resort to try figure out what she can do. And again, it's that thing of like, in the midst of all this unspeakable terror, people are going about their lives. They're, you know, having arguments with their mother. They're, you know, the generator keeps messing up on them. Keeps going on the fritz. You know, people are having coffee and like talking shit about the weather or something. Like, you know, a little dog is peeing up against the side of the building. Life continues. But it's all done in the backdrop of this horrible, horrible thing. I love this. This is Ireland's entry into the Oscars. As much as I loved it, I don't know if it will get shortlisted. I hope it does. God, I hope it does, because it's great. But I don't think this will get shortlisted, primarily because documentaries don't generally tend to get far in Best Foreign Language. This would be entered into the Best Foreign Language. If it got into documentaries, great. I'd love to see it get into the documentary. But I wouldn't hold out hope for it.
Yeah. Is there a narrative arc in it, or is it more like a portrait of the place?
No, it's kind of like a slice of life, you know, that sort of way. It's wonderful, kind of like you're just being brought into this world. It's this kind of, again, like an oasis. There's not necessarily a narrative. They're just trying to kind of keep the building going. And like, you're left with this sort of, even if, you know, they literally start shelling the place, these people are still going to be here. They're so resilient. They don't care. They will keep going. They're not going to give up, because this place has been, I mean, it's evident from looking at it, this place has been there since like the 60s or 70s. Like, it would have been there in the communist times. And it's gone through, the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, and they're still there. They're still going to continue. Like,
yeah.
Gotcha. I love it. It's great. Yeah. It's in select cinemas. Like, the IFI, Lighthouse, Triskel might have But yeah, absolutely worth a watch if you see it.
Yeah. And so they are rebooting Scrubs.
Yeah.
Everybody's coming back.
It's not a reboot.
It's just a continuation.
Kind of a
Does that mean like they all love the show that much, or just none of those actors had anything else to do?
I mean, what do you think personally?
Well, Zach Braff was kind of does a lot of directing.
They were doing a rewatch podcast. Presumably they've run out of episodes of that. So now they're like, okay, now we need to make the show again so that we can do another rewatch podcast. Okay. I'm being very cynical, but yeah, John C. McGinley has signed up again. He obviously played Dr. Cox. Judy Rhys has also signed up, so that they join Zach Braff, Donald Faison and Sarah Chalk, who were the original gang. So yeah. I mean, as Brian said, it's not a reboot, and they already tried to do it at the end of Scrubs with a new cast of characters anyway, with them being older.
Was in it.
Crazy. I forgot that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is catering to a very specific group of people, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it. But beyond that, what point?
When's it due to return?
When is it due to? Not actually sure. Picked the series up to series in July, so probably not till next year at the earliest.
Okay, fair enough. That's our lot. Thanks to Fionnuala, Linda, and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks in at mine.
The martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.